sometimes we don't have that same satisfaction as convincing grandma to go vegan. You know, it feels good. We're like, yes, we saw it in front of our eyes. We see it every time we sit down to a meal with her. Getting a cage-free commitment, it feels like it winds up somewhere in the ether, and we don't have that same connection to it. But the reality is, this is some of the most effective change that we can make.
Hello and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On the show, I interview peak performing innovators in the creative, social impact, and earth conservation spaces who are working to change the world. This episode is brought to you by Brain FM, which combines the best of music and neuroscience to help you relax, focus, meditate, and even sleep. And if you're liking the show, I would love it if you'd buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/IsoldeT. See the show notes for details. And now, let's get on with the show. Hey there, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg, and I am super honored that you have taken the time to spend part of your day with me and my amazing guest. Check this out. Alex Wolf is senior New York City field organizer for the Humane League and also works as the campaign engagement lead for her team. She works with volunteers in and around New York City area to mobilize and empower them to take action in support of the campaigns, ultimately helping to reduce the suffering of animals, and you know how close that is to my heart. She believes in the value of movement building by focusing on and connecting to members of our communities first. In her previous career, Alex worked as a professional television actor on TV shows including 1600 Penn, Cold Case, and Nashville. She was also a big sister for 10 years in the Big Brother, Big Sister program for at-risk youth. Alex currently resides in New York City with her husband and cat named Denise. Alex, thank you so much for being here. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Isolde. What an honor. I'm thrilled to be here and just connecting with you and your audience today. So thanks for having me.
It's absolutely my pleasure. I have so many questions, but first and foremost, what brought you? I don't know if it was an awakening or come to Jesus moment. I'm not sure, but what was it that brought you from television actor to animal activist? How did that happen?
Yeah. No, to be completely honest, Isolde, it was a fairly natural extension of my previous career. I spent my entire youth and young adult life training to be an actor. It's where I got my formal education in. And then I moved to Los Angeles. And as you mentioned in your beautiful introduction, I worked in commercials, television, and a little bit of theater as well. The reality of show business, as many know, is that it's quite hard. And the reason I got into it in the first place is that I loved storytelling. You know, as a young kid, you'd see me, you know, with the VHS tape in of my favorite movie, like pause, rewind, and, you know, reenacting the scenes. And I loved it. I loved connecting to the people and hearing about stories and topics that I had my young little self had never heard before. And I just became completely mesmerized. Mm. And, you know, so for me, when walking away from my career as an actor, which was purely a result of just total burnout, I realized that I love storytelling. This is what I love to do. And this is why I became an actor. And the reason I didn't want to be a professional actor anymore is because I didn't have any control at that point in my career over the stories that I had the opportunity to tell. So I was not fulfilled anymore. Mm. And there was a lot of us in my generation, you know, we are the generation of multiple careers, multiple jobs, moving around. And I think for me, there was this 5-year period where there was a lot of soul searching, a lot of bartending, nannying, babysitting, and a lot of other different fun, creative jobs. You know, you name it, I've done it. But I have been a vegetarian since I was about 7 years old after an unfortunate trip to the grocery store, a field trip with my school. And then as I got older. I'm sorry, someone was just buzzing the door. I got distracted. I apologize. No worries. New York living, am I right? Constant noise. You have construction, I have delivery people. It's a constant battle. But you know,
absolutely.
I was just saying that for me, and then I became vegan, you know, about 11 or 12 years ago after going to an all vegan wedding and seeing being pointed in the direction of Forks Over Knives, the documentary. Mm. But for me, I feel like, you know, that transition period of where do I really belong and what do I really need to say and what's my place in the world and how can I be of service, which was something that was so important to me that I didn't feel like I had in my previous career. It just was so, it just made so much sense. And as soon as I think I stopped trying to find the answer and I just allowed myself to connect with my community and find my sort of plant-based animal rights family, because I didn't have that in my regular friendships and family at that point, was just sort of, it just sort of all started to happen from there. You know, I was like, wow, these are the people who are doing really inspiring work. And these are the people who want to see change in the world. I want to see this change in the world. And look, they're telling this story of, oh, wow, you can be a storyteller in so many ways. And I think I just had such a narrow vision for such a long time of how and what I wanted to do with my life. It became so clear once I kind of stepped back in my vision, I had periphery all of a sudden. I was able to take in, yeah, this huge massive problem that I think we're facing as a society and recognize, wow, this is where I get to influence change and tell stories. And I went to, you know, a couple of wonderful community type meetings. There used to be an informal group that started after the 2016 election by co-president of Smarties, Liz D. She started a group called Vegan Lady Boss, and it was just a couple of folks in her apartment. And then it grew to this sort of global, wonderful thing. And women, people who identified as both vegan and women, had this safe space to sort of connect about discussion topics and have effective learn how to have effective conversations. And we talked about we were able to make asks of one another and share resources and connections and network. And it was really a beautiful thing. And that's really how I wound up working in animal rights. I just was bumping elbows and making friendships and bonds with these incredible leaders, women leaders in this movement. So that's sort of the long-winded answer to your important question.
Not a long-winded answer at all. So full of really good stuff. It's amazing to me actually how much you connected telling stories with affecting change. That's my bailiwick or my area of fascination, that telling stories can change lives, it can change minds, it can change the world. And so you've gone from telling stories where you didn't feel like you were the storyteller, but rather the actor of the story, to telling the stories that you think are really important. So with the work that you're doing with, it, you know, being vegan, being an activist, trying to change minds about the suffering of animals with the Humane League, can you talk a little bit about what stories you're telling and how you're trying to affect change through your work at the Humane League?
Absolutely. Yeah, I am a passionate supporter of this organization that I am so honored and lucky to work with and for. The Humane League is an international nonprofit dedicated to ending the abuse of animals raised for food. And we do this primarily through corporate campaigning. We believe that institutional change is where we're going to really see basically we're going to get the most bang for our buck. You know, we're going to put in all this effort to pressure companies who are basically profiting off of extreme animal abuse. And we're going to go directly to the source and we're going to say, hey, we're going to give you the biggest PR headache of your nightmares, because we know that your customers don't support this, you know? So we, and you have a corporate social responsibility here, you know? So we have had a lot of success with this tactic, you know, this strategy of going after the companies directly. And we also focus on veg advocacy as well. So individual change, you know, encouraging folks to leave animals off their plate entirely. But we also recognize that, you know, this is, it's not all or nothing. You know, you can affect change step by step, day by day, incrementally. And there's a lot of people and organizations and minds and leaders and thinkers in this movement who have very different approaches. And I think we all have a really important place in the movement. For me, I connect so much to the Humane League's theory of change and our incremental approach because I see how effective it is. You know, we focus on targeting the largest corporations. So we have, you know, I think it was in 2016, we founded the Open Wing Alliance, which was an extension of the Humane League, because we had had so much success with our cage-free campaigning. So essentially we spent, you know, the last decade securing commitments from companies to go cage-free for the eggs in their supply chain, for the laying egg hens in their supply chain. And we saw, we just had so much success with this that we were like, well, we need to move on. You know, basically every major company in the United States had made a commitment. So we then moved on to targeting chickens raised for meat. You know, some people don't even know that these animals are raised differently. So basically, you know, the Open Wing Alliance allows us to focus now more globally, and they work with member organizations all over the world. We have, I think, 76 members in 6 continents across the globe, and we basically have funding and grants that we provide to organizations in these different countries around the world, training and building leaders on the ground in these places so that we can have effectively a global impact. And so when the Open Wing Alliance, which we call the OWA for short, and the Humane League, which we call THL for short, when THL and OWA collaborate, our impact is truly global. Most recently, we targeted in late 2021, Yum Brands, who's the parent company to KFC, Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, and Habit Burger Grill. And we got them to make a global cage-free commitment for all of their locations worldwide, including liquid and shell egg products. So, you know, it's not super sexy or glamorous, right? Because I think for a lot of activists, we volunteer and we rally because it feels good. It makes us feel good, right? But when the change, it's not quite as tangible, or it takes a couple of years, you know, these are huge systems we are overhauling. You know, this takes time, patience, coordination, strategy, and a lot of, you know, a lot of persistence and accountability. When we make these changes, it's sometimes we don't have that same satisfaction as convincing grandma to go vegan. You know, it feels good. We're like, yes, we saw it in front of our eyes. We see it every time we sit down to a meal with her. Getting a cage-free commitment, you know, it feels like it winds up somewhere in the ether, and we don't have that same connection to it. But the reality is, this is some of the most effective change that we can make. To me, if I have the choice to be slowly gassed to death versus being boiled alive, I clearly know which choice I'm going to make. Okay. So for broiler chickens, you know, part of our ask is we are asking companies to adopt the Better Chicken Commitment. Now, broiler is an industry term, again, for chickens who are raised for their meat. And the Better Chicken Commitment is a scientifically veterinary backed and animal welfare expert backed set of standards that significantly improves the welfare of chickens. And the reason we focus on chicken welfare at the Humane League is because of the 9 billion land animals that are raised for food in the United States every year, about 90% of those are chickens. So that's 9 out of 10 animals. And because chickens aren't protected by the Humane Slaughter Act, we feel a real responsibility to this incredible suffering. And for me, if I can improve the lives of those birds who are trapped in this broken food system at all, in any small way, that is a huge win. And then to say, to be able to improve their living standards by the hundreds of millions annually, I mean, that blows my mind. That to me is the most, that keeps me going. That gives me faith when, you know, I'm out to dinner and, you know, I'm clearly the minority in a meat-eating world. So I think that the work we do at the Humane League is extremely important. I think that the work we do with our coalition partners, that we have coalition partners, that we collaborate in this industry is so important. And I'm really, really, I've never been more connected to myself and to the work that I do. And so I could speak for literally days on all of the exciting things we work on at the Humane League. But I think, you know, to get a snapshot for those who are listening, you know, we focus on corporate campaigning against the companies who are exploiting animals, chickens specifically, for a profit. And we get them to make commitments and then we follow through and we require third-party auditing and we require accountability, public accountability to their progress and when a commitment is fulfilled. And so I think that if that's what you can walk away with, I think you'll have a pretty good and clear understanding of the real crux of the work we do at the Humane League.
Again, so many questions. Wow. I'm taking a second to take it in because
please, yes.
The thing, you know, this is the Innovative Mindset podcast, so I'm kind of going, okay, there are a couple of different things that out of everything you just said. First, I'm like, yay, absolutely, this is incredible and incredibly powerful work that you're doing. And yet how, I guess maybe you've already answered this notion, but when things don't go your way, when you know, because this is something that I struggle with daily. I've been vegetarian since the 80s. I went vegan about, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago, something like that. But I struggle daily with seeing walking into a store and seeing the packaged dead animals just kills me every time. And it's getting worse, I'll be honest, every mm-hmm. time, because I see that they're that they're being killed by the, as you said, by the billions every year in just this country. Mm-hmm. So when things don't go your way, when the company doesn't follow through and do what they said they were going to do, how do you keep your mindset dedicated? What do you need to do? And the people who are working with you, activists of all sorts, how do you do that? How do you keep your mind and your brain focused when you might be faced with the reality that you, as much as you tried, couldn't help the animals you're trying to help?
Oh, what a beautiful question. Yeah, I mean, first of all, we almost always win.
Yes.
I have to say that because
no, that's
I
great.
Say that because we're relentless, and it's a core value. And you know, I do think that there's a purity problem in the movement. Excuse me, and a bit of a perfectionism problem, but mm-hmm. not really in the movement and for Americans. in the workforce. And so, you know, I don't want to, I don't, you know, well, I guess I want to say, I don't want Relentless to be misunderstood as, will literally lay down and die for the cause, because I won't, and no one should, because then we're of no use. But we are relentless, and we fight tooth and nail. But we also know when to walk away, when we know we're no longer being effective. And for me, you know, instead of seeing that as a loss, what I see that as is a new opportunity to be more effective somewhere else. Mm. Our ability to stay nimble and pivot toward where we can really create change without, you know, harping on, oh, wow, we really lost there. We really wasted our time. We did none of that. What we did is we put pressure on a massive company. They know who we are. They knew that we are a force to be reckoned with. They know that they are, you know, their hackles are up because they're very aware of their competition making these changes around them. And so, you know, I think it's important to recognize that perfect is the enemy of good. We have a long way to go. You know, we have a long way to go in this fight. And if we are so overwhelmed by, you know, the suffering we see to the extent that we can't stomach it anymore, then we have a real problem. So what I say, you know, I work with volunteers directly. And what I say is, you have to take care of yourself. I mean, this is true for anyone. It doesn't matter what work you're in, but especially when you are constantly facing abuse and torture, you have to find a way to say enough for now, because I need to be ready on Friday for that protest, or I need to be ready to write that powerful letter to the editor that I've had in my mind, in response to that article about, you know, the rodeo coming to Madison Square Garden, which happened last weekend here in New York City. You have to stay sharp, and it's just like an athlete. You have to rest so your muscles can recover, and so you can be prepared for your sport. And this is our sport. This is our art. This is our life. You know, veganism is not a diet, it's a lifestyle. And most people who are committed to this lifestyle are activists, you know, because they're not just voting with their wallets. They're often taking their forks, you know, they're taking their beliefs and they're dedicating their life to this. It sometimes in small ways and oftentimes in really big ways. So I think that for me, you know, taking care of your body, resting, finding humor. Oh my God, you know, this is we just had a retreat with my team, the organizing team at the Humane League. We all work with volunteers and we did an exercise where we learned that our common strength as a team is humor. Hmm. We make each other laugh. We bring levity because we have to, because the work and the stuff we're facing every day is just too dark, you know? So I think, and also too, it's really important as an activist to have your life outside of activism, right? Like one of my favorite things to do is I have a group of girlfriends here in the city and we play poker once a month together. It's just something we really enjoy and we connect. It has nothing to do with my veganism. It has nothing to do with my work. It has nothing to do with my romantic relationship. It has, you know, it only has to do with connection and pure joy and laughter. And so for me, these are ways that I recharge. And I think it's crucial. If you're not carving out space for yourself to do that, and you know, and you're saying, oh, but no, the animals, I can't rest because the animals need me. I always remind people like, yeah, but you know, you're only human and you have to think about the long haul because we need you. We need everyone in the game as long as possible. And the other thing I would say too, is that you don't have to be vegan or even vegetarian to recognize that our food system is broken. I mean, from the bottom up, you know? Mm-hmm. So we all have the opportunity to influence change in this area, regardless of our eating habits. So I got a little off topic, but I've been known to do that. So
not at all. No. Please never apologize. I love this. You more than answered my question. And it's interesting to me because what you're saying, it rings very true that we need to self-care. And I am reminded though of I do this thing, my friend Dan calls it teleparables. I take lines and scenes from TV and movies and use them as life lessons. And there was a scene in Rob Roy where Jessica Lange's character, yeah, it is a great movie. And she is, Tim Roth's character rapes her. It's ugly and bad. And her friend, who's her husband's best friend, says, "We have to tell your husband. We have to tell your husband." And she said, "No. Because he'll be killed if he finds out about this. Because I know he's going to go challenge this guy to a duel." And she says, "If I can bear to have it happen, you can bear to be silent." And when I heard that, it just went. And so for me, I change it in my mind to, if these animals can bear to have this happen to them, then I can bear to be witness. And that's kind of where I take my veganism from. That. And that's probably why I don't self-care as much as I could. But it's that moment of awareness of going, wait, this is suffering going on a few blocks away from me. I live in Brooklyn. A few blocks away from me, there are probably slaughterhouses working right now.
There absolutely are.
Yeah. And I know, I'm sure. And that's the thing, is we have to look at it from that perspective. If there's suffering going on around you and you're not aware of it, that's one thing. But once you're aware of it, then you have to act. And so you said that you work with volunteers, and I would love to know, if somebody hears this and they go, "I need to volunteer with the Humane League," what do they need to do that?
Ah, wonderful question. Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, they can reach out to me, and I hope they will. You can share my email and the Humane League's website. I can also share we have a volunteer interest form just indicating that you'd like to learn more, you know? So we have what we call an onboarding process for the volunteer. And the reason it's a bit of a formal process is because we want the volunteer to know exactly what we're all about, what we're doing. We get a lot of people who come to us at the Humane League thinking they're going to be advocating for dogs because they've made a mistake and think we're the Humane Society, or they think, you know, whatever they think.
Misconceptions.
Or different expectations. And so we really like, you know, we want to work with volunteers who really know what we're working on and are really excited about it. And we want to support their growth and leadership. You know, the movement is in an amazing time of transformation. And you know, we're working to create compassionate leaders, which is so desperately missing from the canvas right now, you know? Mm-hmm. So volunteers, they can go to our website at www.thehumaneleague.org/volunteer-with-us. So thehumaneleague.org, volunteer with us, and you can fill out the confirmation form. And then what happens is we have 9 field organizers who are working across the nation. Each organizer represents a different area. There are 2 hub city organizers, myself, 4 volunteers in the New York City area, and then Janet Martinez, who covers the Los Angeles area. And then the other 7 organizers oversee multiple states. And when you submit the volunteer application form, The relevant organizer for your location will be in touch with you. They'll give you an opportunity to check in with them one-on-one. These check-ins are so important because they keep us accountable to each other. They keep us in the know about each other's lives, interests, skills, what we care about, what we want to work on, because community building and movement building is the only thing that is going to really allow this great big change to happen. It's so much more than just awareness raising and education building. It's about teaching each other how to be better advocates. You know, it's one thing to have, like you said, the information. It's another thing to know what to do with it and how to express it and communicate it to those who don't have that same breadth of experience or knowledge with the topic. And it's so important to approach people, you know, with really clear intentions so that, you know, you don't, that person doesn't just sort of disappear because you're to this or to that or too much for them, you know? So once, you know, you have this one-on-one, we also concurrently, you can either, you know, check in with your field organizer first, if you want to have that one-on-one interaction, or you have the option of attending our sort of getting started session. It's kind of like an orientation where we really go through the nitty gritty of our work, examples of campaigns, what volunteers will be doing, like what, how they can be of service to the animals as a part of our changemaker community. And then we get them on Slack, which is a, you know, an online messaging, professional messaging system that we use. And I know a lot of other grassroots activist communities use. It's very popular for political campaigning as well. And, you know, through events and through, you know, leafleting and tabling and, you know, humane education presentations in classrooms and writing, we really inspire our and encourage our volunteers to grow in the way that they need to grow as activists while giving them these opportunities, giving them chances to email an executive at Costco, you know, or make a phone call to Burger King, or whatever action it is, to create this content for them, to create resources and training materials so that they can continue to grow and go out there in their own communities and start building up their own communities of volunteers. So really, we work with a distributed organizing model, empowering people to grow and empowering each other, you know, to stay accountable. So it's really, we hope to have made the process easy by streamlining the steps. So if you have any questions, of course, let me know, but I would be absolutely jazzed to work with some of your listeners who might be interested.
Awesome. And speaking of that kind of work, this is COVID times and you had to pivot, it seems to me, to take things sort of out of maybe real time space and into virtual space. How did that work? How do you and your volunteers work in the virtual space, and what innovations have you enacted to make that possible?
Yeah, I mean, us and everybody else, right, in the world, literally.
Sure, absolutely.
We all had to pivot. But yeah, grassroots organizing was very challenging in this time. We saw, you know, 2020 was an incredible year for social justice movements across, you know, across the spectrum. And, you know, I think one of the things we learned is, you know, people really need community. And so for us, providing virtual spaces to connect that were, you know, less about just taking action and more about getting to know each other and ideating and yeah, just supporting one another's struggles and but also supporting people's ideas and actions that they have planned to take was really important. You know, some innovative things that came about, you know, right when we went on lockdown, we were about to launch our very in-person plans for Earth Day, which happens in April of each year. And we had this, you know, essentially a climate protest organized all over the country. And when things shut down, we said, you know, this can't be for naught. You know, we've used art as a tool here, and we've created so many inspiring and beautiful assets. You know, the world needs to see them. And so, you know, while virtual organizing is extremely hard, and I absolutely don't think it's the preferred method of making change in a permanent sense, there are some really incredible things that came out of it. You know, we built this beautiful website for our volunteers in 2020 that gave them access to a lot of materials that they would need. We kept in mind the value of multimedia, you know, that people have different learning styles. So we were able to engage change makers on our Changemaker Community Center through video trainings, old past call recordings with special guest speakers, also giving them access to a community directory so they could connect with leaders in their area and, you know, set up their own meetups virtually in whatever capacity they want. We made space for, you know, plant-based Jeopardy and fun in a time that was very, very dark. And, you know, we're always able to continue our digital pressure actions. You know, we come at these companies through by making, you know, on paper recorded, you know, public complaints. You know, that's the whole idea of how we campaign. And so and there were ways to do that safely in person too, with social distancing, masks, being outdoors for protests. But for the most part, yeah, everything transitioned virtually. We experimented with different platforms just to keep things interesting for our community. We also recognized when people needed, you know, needed fewer calls and maybe more, you know, more opportunities to connect in other ways, like our book club, which always would focus sort of on an some kind of animal rights related topic, but also extended to anti-racism work, which we focused a lot on in our community as well. So I think, you know, one of the cool things going back to Earth Day and when we first had to pivot, and I think that really set an awesome tone for us. And the Humane League is a remote organization, anyway, pre-pandemic. So we already had a lot of expertise on how to work in the virtual space as a team. So we really leaned into that strength and supported others as they sort of had to figure out how to work in a virtual space. But it was very cool to see at the beginning of Earth Day, this thing that was so clearly designed to be in person, to then watch this shift sort of magically happen overnight, where assets were being, you know, created into digital PDFs. And I was able to work with my phenomenal coworker, Ryan Bolzan, who is our training specialist on the team. I got to work with him to build this part of the website that would essentially be a plant-based gallery. So everyone would be able to display their art. They'd be able to use this link to submit opinion pieces and point to the value of community connection and creativity in a time that's where we all feel, you know, really isolated and like everything's out of reach. So while it was tough, there were so many opportunities in the virtual space. You know, normally we're all collaborating locally, and now, wow, we have this whole national network that we get to collaborate with that normally we wouldn't have done. So our community really just grew.
Oh, that's amazing. And, you know, that notion to me of, well, if it's not going to work this way, we're just going to make it work another way is, to me, that's creative thinking at its best, right? When you're trying to me, innovation is about trying to solve a problem creatively. And then all of a sudden you're doing it with this cause in mind. So it's trying to do the right thing at the same time. And you've had some wins. I'm specifically thinking, you know, you said 2020 was a huge year. This was actually, I think, passed in 2018, Prop 12, which is the Farm Animal Containment Initiative. Can you talk about that particular win and what it means and how it's going to help animals?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So for those of your listeners who are not familiar, ballot initiatives are something you've probably seen when you've gone to vote, and they are different measures that they are voting, regular everyday citizens get to vote on issues that affect them locally. And on the California 2016 election ballot,
2016.
There was a measure, Prop 12. So you could vote yes or no. And a yes vote would essentially make it illegal to buy. I want to make sure I get this right. To sell any product from veal products, so pigs in gestation crates. I'm sorry, cows in gestation crates, or chickens confined to a certain space. So essentially, it's the largest animal protection law in the history of the United States.
Wow.
And basically, simply put, it's just these farm animals have to require more space, and they cannot be caged. And this is a big deal. And so essentially over the last 4 years, the pork industry has just been fighting this instead of spending the 4 years it had to prepare for this law. And there have been a lot of lawsuits, and of course, a lot of back and forth between, you know, the meat industry. I say that on a whole because there are so many players, and animal rights groups, basically up until like the 11th hour. And it did in effect go into practice on January 1st, 2022. So congratulations to all of us. The nation's largest animal protection law is now in place. And so it's not going to be an easy fight. We're going to have to stay, we're going to have to stay the course on this because we're setting a precedent, you know, and we've seen since so many cage-free laws. I think it's now 7 or 9 states, we have cage-free laws, which means that you can no longer sell or purchase and purchase from another state that doesn't have the law and resell.
Wow.
So
important loophole covered there.
Yeah. It's usually the other side that finds the loopholes, but, we're very excited to see this movement. You know, legislation is typically very slow, and a big part of why we focus on corporate campaigning and just going direct to the source. But these things in concert with each other are exactly what's going to make real change. And then couple that with Senator Cory Booker's beautiful Farm Systems Reform Act that was brought to the floor last year, that would essentially would put a moratorium on new factory farms by 2040. So the ideas that we are thinking big, I mean, these are, you know, I used to have to go to the store and blow the dust off the one soy milk that was stuffed in the back of the shelf, you know, and now we're in a time where we're talking about major political players bringing legislation to the table that would end this system. I mean, it's wild. It's just, it is, it's really crazy. And, you know, the Humane League, where, you know, we value innovation and I mean, we are small players in the innovation space compared to some of the things we're seeing, you know, on a, you know, with cultivated meat, which is produced directly from cells, and essentially the basic elements needed to build muscle and fat, without the, you know, without harming animals, you know, for the most part, it's wild, you know, cultivated meat is identical to conventional meat at the cellular level. And this is something that's happening, you know, in ovosexing technology. This is something that's been developed to avoid the culling of up to 300 million male chicks. Wow. Who die at just hours old simply because they were born male. That's 7 billion annually that we just throw through it like a paper shredder. I mean, literally, it sounds like shit you can't make up, but this is real. You know, this is what we're facing. It sounds so ridiculous that you almost can't take it seriously, but we must. And people are. And in ovosexing is a technology that would allow, you know, the culling to be avoided entirely. I mean, just imagine that. And Mercy for Animals, one of our coalition partners, you know, developed a program called Transformation, where their mission is to help farmers transition out of animal agriculture and into growing crops for the burgeoning plant-based ingredient sector. Specifically, they've had a lot of success working to transition chicken poultry farmers to grow hemp. So, I mean, there is no shortage of innovation in this space, and I am here for it. The Humane League is here for it. We are very proud of the progress that we're seeing, and we're just scratching the surface. There is such a long way to go. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm so glad that you've ended both on a high note and a call to action. If you're listening to this and you want to get involved in the Humane League, please get in touch with Alex or go to the website. I'm going to put all of that stuff in the show notes. Alex, I'm so grateful that you took the time to be here and to talk about this crucial, critical topic. And I hope that you'll come back, because I have like 50 more questions that we didn't get to.
I would love that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I know you have to run, but I have one quick question left. And it is this. It's simple, but I find it yields some profound answers. And the question is, if you had an airplane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
Wow. I would say, plant-based for the animals, plant-based for the children, plant-based for the future, plant-based for the environment, and plant-based for our health.
Okay. That sounds good to me. I love it. Mine would be go vegan, but you know. but anyway, that's another thing.
Well,
we can
like
do.
I said, I am not known for being concise. So
and
there
that
you
is
go.
neither am I. It's just that one happens to be a good catchphrase. Anyway, mm-hmm. Alex, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here. If you've listened to this and you want to be involved, do so. Get in touch with the Humane League. Get active, because this is how we're changing the world. This is how we're innovating. Until next time, this is Isolde Trachtenberg saying, remember to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2022. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, remember to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind.